You're listening to a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, dedicated to bringing podcasters together for the greater good of gaming. It's sort of like Voltron, but with better lip syncing. Find out more at dicetowernetwork.com.
Of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 129.
129 episodes of this show. I still enjoy making this show with you, dear.
Aww, and I enjoy making it with you.
This is episode 129 of the Family Gamers Podcast. I am your host, Andrew, and I'm joined by my lovely, wonderful wife, Anitra.
That's me. But because it's an odd number, we're joined by an additional guest as well.
Yeah, and this guy is legendary. I mean, let me tell you, if you spend any time in board game social media, I suspect the name Daniel Zayas has come across your radar once or twice. We have Dan on the phone today. How are you doing today?
Hello, everybody. How's it going?
We're doing well. I trust you're doing well. We're enjoying some playoff football right now. We're talking about that stuff.
We both are. You're looking forward to a game, and I'm watching the wrap up of the Saints and the Rams. So
it'll be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to this evening and probably getting upset and happy.
Yeah, that sounds about right. And hopefully we're all also enjoying being inside and warm while surrounded by snow outside.
Yes.
You
are freshly in a snow environment, huh?
That is correct. I recently moved to Colorado and I've gotten my first couple doses of snow at this point. I don't hate shoveling. It feels like I'm doing something and I meet all my neighbors because they're all doing the same thing. So I don't hate it, actually. I enjoy the snow shoveling portion of that.
Wait until March.
Okay. I will have a firm update once everything thaws out.
Yeah.
But for now, I'm actually enjoying that part of it.
I understand. Yeah. There are certain good things about it. Right. Yeah. There's something weirdly relaxing about the hum of the snowblower in the distance, you know?
Sure.
So, all right. Well, we didn't have you on the show to talk about football and snow, although those are two things that that are near and dear to all of us, at least physically. But we did have you on the show because you have a new game going up on Kickstarter January 22nd.
That is correct.
All right. And that game is called Tangled Timelines. I actually got a chance to play this on Tabletopia last week with you.
With me. Yeah, I was doing a demo and you were available and I appreciate you taking the time to grab a sneak peek because at that time it wasn't live on Tabletopia even. It was strictly demos that I was hand selecting people to just come on and you were gracious enough to join.
Wow, now I feel special.
It's the online equivalent of being at a con and someone grabbing you and be like, "Hey, let me show you my game."
It was like that. It's a really good selling point when I say this game actually does only take, 15 or 20 minutes to do the demo version.
Yeah, let's talk about Tangled Timelines a little bit.
Okay, sure.
We played kind of like a more simplified version without the special powers on the cards.
Correct.
And in the simplified version of this game, it's really basically a strongly thematic set collection game.
Correct. Yes. The way the game works is, you'll be able to see this in the Kickstarter, but I'll explain it for the listeners, is you start with a hand of four cards, and those four cards represent different heroes, and those heroes can be of varying skill levels, and the heroes are named strategically, right? They're named assassin, bard, cleric, druid, and if you can tell by the pattern I'm doing, it's an alphabetical set of fantasy characters, and that is important because when you the whole purpose of the game is to rescue other heroes like yourself. You're sending heroes into the Tangled Timelines in order to rescue them. You know that you're going to be sacrificing your hero that you play. And you're hoping that you've played a strong enough hero compared to the other players who are playing against you in order to win initiative. And if you win initiative, then you get to trade with the Tangled Timelines first. And any heroes who aren't rescued from the rescue attempts by all the players are then lost to the dimensional abyss. And all of these terms are important because when you actually play with the special abilities, all of these terms are interacted with depending on who wins initiative. So you would play, for instance, let's say you're playing a four-player game and someone plays an assassin, a bard, a cleric, and a druid, and what's presented in front of you are also, let's say, an assassin, a bard, a cleric, and a druid. However, because if you remember, I said that they have different skill levels. Let's say that you were the person who played the apprentice assassin. So there's an apprentice, there's a novice, there's a master, and there's a legendary of each hero. And if you played the apprentice assassin, then you would trade with the Tangled Timelines any assassins that are present, as well as any apprentices that are present. So let's say I mentioned that there was an assassin, a bard, a cleric, and a druid in the Tangled Timelines, and there happened to be, the assassin happened to be a legendary, but the cleric was an apprentice. So what would happen is you played your apprentice assassin, and then you would claim into your hand the assassin legendary as well as the cleric apprentice, because they match with something of the hero that you played. And then you would lose the apprentice assassin and the next player, who would be a bard, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe they played an apprentice bard. So they would get the bard that was in the Tangled Timelines. Let's say it was a master bard, right? And they would get the bard. But that person who played the bard would be able to save the assassin that you lost, even though you won initiative, you did all the trades, you got the heroes that you needed. But the person who played the bard would then rescue that assassin that you used to save other heroes, because it matches with the apprentice level of the skill levels.
It's sort of cycling in and out through that abyss.
It's a bit tangled in there, right? Cheesy jokes.
but, are our stock in trade. We got you.
Perfect. This will work out great then. So the very thematic set collection game. I've been working on this for a while, and there's the set collection element is so far removed. You really are playing this, like if you've played poker as an example, like you are playing against the player and assuming what they might be going for or thinking that they might play against you. And it's a very meta game of that twisting and turning and twisting and turning until you get to the end of the game and you've each built this large hand, hopefully, right? You've built this expansive hand, and you then, we didn't go over the scoring, but the scoring is such that you will score the best chain and then the best sets. So A through M, right? A sequential set. And then you would afterwards score who has the best four of a kind. So like if you have all four assassins, for instance, in your hand, then you have the best four of a kind possible. But that usually doesn't happen because you need to play the assassins in order to win initiative, in order to get the cards you actually want. So what happens more often is you'll have like this player who gets a four of a kind and it's all the way down at letter M or L. Because no one's really been going for that. But if you plan ahead, you can easily strategize and say, okay, I've already started with one L in the beginning of the game, so maybe I can strategize and get all of the L's, right? All of the liches what it is. So, there is a set collection scoring element, but that's really to determine how well you played the interesting parts of the game.
And it's not even – so that kind of describes the sort of simplified version of the game. And I think in the quote that I gave you for Kickstarter, I mentioned that you could play this game with really anybody like 8 to 80. And correct. I think that set collection, that straightforward set collection piece, yes, there's some psychology in there as well. Mm-hmm. That's the game that plays really well with kids, with 8, 9, 10, 11, 12-year-olds. It gets a little bit more complex when you add in the abilities.
Right. So let me do a real quick explanation of that. So the person who wins initiative in the full version of the game, right, in the full gamer's version, I'll call it. If you win initiative, every card has a special ability. So if you do win initiative, you have to kick off your special ability for better or worse. And sometimes depending on how high the card is. So a really good example is the assassin. So if you win with the assassin, then you have to also discard one of your cards. You choose it, but from your hand, you have to get rid of one of your cards and give it to the person who was on the lowest of initiative that round. So you're deciding in your head, what can I win with for initiative, but what ability will not hurt me that bad? You're already going to lose that assassin by playing it, right? And you're also going to discard one of your cards from your hand. You better be picking up at least two cards, otherwise you're operating at a deficit.
You're running backwards, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So you do a lot more analysis of, is this card worth it, even though I will probably win initiative with this card.
Sure.
Bard is handicapped as well. If the bard wins the first initiative, then the bard actually can only pick up one card. It's not really much of a fighter. So that thematically you can appreciate this, where the assassin has like collateral damage and is taking out one of the characters in the process of winning initiative. Mm-hmm. It's overzealous maybe and just goes back into his roots, right? And then you have the bard, and she's not much of a fighter, not that strong, so she's actually gonna only be able to rescue one character out of the timelines, even if she matches with all of them, as an example. She only gets to pick one that she matches and is able to retrieve
sure.
from the Tengel timelines. So there's a huge meta portion of this that we're not doing justice to, but while you're playing, you have very, very tough challenges to decide what you want to play that will win initiative. And maybe you don't want to win initiative. Like you said, you're saying, okay, there's an assassin out. I'm hoping someone plays an assassin so that I could maybe play this druid and not win initiative. And just play a normal hand. Mm-hmm. And whoever takes the assassin will have to kick off their ability. Or you see two assassins, you're like, someone's definitely going to play an assassin to try to win them. So I'm going to play this really low card so that I can benefit from the assassin playing a high card.
Yep. I love games that work in that kind of meta wake. It's the right amount of stuff I can hold in my head. And that initiative sure. deciding how much do I really want to go first? Or would I actually really like to go last instead? It makes me think of a game I've really enjoyed called Grabwell.
Oh yeah, Grabwell. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've heard Euchre for the basic version of the games. I haven't heard someone use Gravwell, but that's really interesting. That's a good comparison. I always recommend, now that we've gone through how you play the game, I always recommend that if you are new to the game, or if you have even half the people who are new to the game, always start a round without special abilities.
Sure.
Because you need that round in order to absorb the flow of cards. And then once you pick that up, then you can add the layer of special abilities onto it very easily. If you start with special abilities, you start to get bogged down by which special abilities do what, in addition to the way the cards flow, and it really slows down the game. So I'm telling you now, like the person who made the game, don't play with special abilities until you're comfortable with the original version of the game.
Sure, that makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. And we talk all the time about games that grow with your kids, and like Andrew was saying, the basic version seems great for the younger end of our audience.
Or even just the more inexperienced. Yeah. Think of like your stepmother.
Oh, fair.
For example.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. If you're into like classic poker card games, then you'll pick up the basic version real quick.
Right.
Cool. Yeah. I really had a lot of fun playing it last week. It went super quick, which I really appreciate about it. It's like, you know what? We've got 15 minutes. Let's throw down, a game of Tangle Timelines or whatever.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
Yeah, I like that a lot. The version that we played on Tabletopia didn't have final art on it, but it had a lot of the art on it, which looks great.
Yeah,
it doesn't have final art yet.
I've been watching all of the art you've been posting to Facebook,
like teasing,
and it looks
teasers.
Fantastic.
Yeah, the artist is I'm working with two artists. So the character artist is Illustragus and Gus for short. He is incredible. I worked with him on when Cutie Met Patootie. I discovered him on Twitter just selling commission artwork, and I was blown away by his style. And I brought him on for when Cutie Met Patootie, and then we just carried that relationship forward into this project, and he's just gotten better and better. I'll be honest with you. I sent him a few examples of like martial arts poses, and then he came back with like half of the character sketches, and I was taken aback. I gave him a lot of free rein of, I want it to be inclusive, and there's a diverse cast in this game, and I want that to be front and center. But if you could use these martial arts poses to show them in dynamic actions, then that will add to the artwork. And what he brought back in the first set of emails was just like, oh, okay, I forgot how great you were, and then went and did something like that. The second artist who I'm working with is Bryce Cook, and he is the lead on graphic design and a lot of the print files and the Kickstarter elements. He's kind of my catch-all for everything besides the graphic design. So he's been invaluable as well. Let me plug Alex Williams too, because that dude just came out of nowhere and said, "Hey, I'm looking for animation work. Can you refer me if ever you hear about something?" I was like, "Hey, actually, I have a personal project called Tangle Timelines, and who I would usually use is Bryce, but he was essentially slammed with work, and anything above and beyond what we were already doing would have been a no-go. So I tapped Alex Williams for the video animation, and it's currently on Facebook now, but you'll be able to see it in the Kickstarter. It is mm-hmm. some really high level stuff. He was able to take probably only gave him seven art assets for the video, and he took that and added so much to it that he's awesome. He's incredible. I highly recommend anyone take him on for if you're looking for your Kickstarter video, your any animation work in general.
Mm. Sure.
Cool. So I mentioned at the beginning of the show that that you are all things social media. Do you want to talk about what you do on Facebook?
I manage a number of Facebook communities, and in doing that, it's kind of weird. So I'm employed by Longpack Games Manufacturing. So a majority of my day is dedicated to helping people with their manufacturing side of the projects. Now it's not just manufacturing. I guess that's a little reductive. I anything that you would do for a Kickstarter, I am able to offer advice from the perspective of manufacturing or logistics or the best way to put your best foot forward and maybe interact with the community and how to best market maybe your game. It's all encompassing, but the end goal is generally, you don't have to work with Longpack, but I'd like you to at least get a quote. And if the numbers are good, then, and you trust me, then we can maybe do business together.
Right.
Now the community building portion of that started before I had worked for Longpack, but has become a very, very important part of the work that I do with Longpack. So I get a little bit of a loose leash when I'm with my boss, because he appreciates and understands the benefit of community building, right? And I'm indebted for that. I'm very appreciative that I'm able to do that on a daily basis. But what I really do is, I'll just name off a couple of communities. I operate Tabletop Backer Party, which is a new name for what used to be Kickstarter board games. In that group, we talk all about Kickstarters. We talk all about other crowdfunding platforms now, to be honest. That the move of the name was to become more inclusive towards all types of tabletop games, to include RPGs and wargaming, and then also encompass all of the crowdfunding platforms, because I think this year, this is a prediction, you can quote me on this maybe in a year. This year, I would bet that you're going to start seeing the big Indiegogo projects for tabletop gaming. There's been a couple on Indiegogo, but what's happening right now is that I would imagine the newer creators might feel that they're getting pushed out by the larger creators on Kickstarter, and they might just go make mm-hmm. a home for themselves on a different platform. And I don't know if that's Indiegogo, to be honest. I think it might be a different platform. And Indiegogo is the best alternative to Kickstarter right now as far as usability and, sure, and potential audience and comfort with, sure, with customers giving them their information, right? The other communities I run, one that I definitely want to plug is Board Game Fitness Challenge. Every quarter, members are up for a challenge where they can lose up to 5% of their initial weigh-in weight. And we do all these fun activities throughout the quarter to encourage people. If you're not looking to lose weight, you can definitely join and just be part of the fun. But if you are looking to lose weight, it's a very, very helpful and supportive community that it's not just me running it. There's like five or six admins who are working, you know, day and night in that group in order to encourage people to be healthy is really all that's happening. A lot of active members who haven't even like left the house in a year, right? And they're now going out and doing these excursion activities, and it's a really powerful experience to be part of that. So I really, really want, if you are interested in fitness at all, if you're interested in health, in diet and nutrition, whatever, you definitely give a look at Board Game Fitness Challenge, because it's something that is, it's probably the most rewarding work that I do that is outside of, you know, anything I do for Long Pack, I would argue. But it's definitely a beneficial thing for the community. I also run, I just launched Aftermarket Tabletop, which is for all those third-party upgrades that you can do to your game. I'm working with a few of the main players like Game Trays and Bogan Token to see if they might want to have a bigger involvement in that. But that one's a newer community. I work with Solo Board Gamers. That one's the biggest group that I actually work with. They have more than 10,000 members.
Yeah, it's crazy over there.
Yeah, it's blown up in the last year or so. All of a sudden, publishers realized that people wanted to play solo versions of their games. And I say that with a grain of salt because because there have been solo versions of games going back, you know, years. However, it's become front and center, especially on Kickstarter, of, oh, do you have a solo version of this game?
Yeah.
It's a deal breaker if you don't have it.
It's become more more prominent in the marketing and the features of the game rather than sort of a, oh, well, is there a way for me to play this solo? Let me go
right
find something.
Yes, yes. It's become a necessity for publishers to include a solo version of the game. And not just like a thrown together solo version of the game. Like, it needs to be as rewarding as the multiplayer version of the game.
Exactly.
I'll be honest with you, like, they're ruthless. The members of that group will shut you down if they don't think that your solo version is fun. And they'll say so loudly, which is great. I mean, it's good. It improves the industry, I think, that the stakeholders in that experience are vocal about what they like and what they don't like, because they're also equally will equally praise you if you do an amazing job. We've got a couple members who have made their entire publishing business as a result of that solo board gamers group just rallying around a product. Four Against Darkness is a good example. That was a really popular one that went through the group. One Deck Dungeon was a good one. There's a number of games that have gone through the group that just swept like wildfire. And then you imagine, even if, I don't know, if 5% of 10,000 members hop on board, you're made. Like, you got it. You did it. Congratulations.
You've got a pretty good customer base right there.
Yeah, you've got a good customer base if only 5% of those people, but obviously more hop on than that even on some, yeah, depends on the project. But yeah, it's very, very lucrative for publishers to cater to the solo board gamer audience nowadays.
So how's the solo version of Tangled Timelines working out?
Solo version of Tangled Timelines is actually very similar to the multiplayer version. All that's happening is you are going to mandatorily play four cards from your hand, which could be a bust at the very start of the game if you get dealt a hand that doesn't work with what is presented in front of you. However, past that very first turn, you now have a ability to recoup from that. And it's a very interesting thing to have 6 or 7 cards and then look at what you have for 4 cards in front of you to match with. And you're going to have to play 4 of your 7 cards. And you're just trying to say, okay, if I play this one, then I'll definitely win initiative on that one. And you're actually also, with those 4 cards that you're playing in them in initiative order, and you have to kick off the special ability of that first card. So there's a, sure, there's a deep, you're playing a 4-player game solo is really what's happening. And you're trying, and you're pooling your cards together is really what it is.
Huh.
So, oh, so you're, it's, yeah,
and
it's
you're
very,
you're trying to make like chains in what you play.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's the same scoring. Sure. You are trying to actually create sets of 4 because there's only, it's just your hand, right? So you're,
right,
so
right.
you're trying to create sets of 4. For every set of 4 you create, you will get 10 points. If you get up to 100 points, you win the game. So it's how many games does it take you, how many decks that you run through in order to get to what is 10 4 of a kinds, really, is what you're going for.
Sure, sure.
Mm.
Cool.
Interesting.
Yep. So on expert, like on expert level, you would get anywhere between 1 to 3 games and then diminished from there. So if you can get it in 3 games, you're considered an expert in Tangled Timeline.
Neat. Yeah, that's something that that I'm going to have to try out.
Yeah, for sure.
You're a much bigger solo gamer than I am, Anitra.
Well, you say that, and it's kind of true, but I am a very specific niche of solo gamer. Like solo games that play in 20 minutes or less and are compact, which
yep.
this will definitely
this,
fit that.
This is that. This is definitely that. And you are not alone in saying that I am. It's funny because it's like, oh, I enjoy solo games, but if you look at the solo board gamers group, you actually see that like there's a very, very diverse range of just as many as there are gamers, right? Like I like set collection games, or I like worker placement games. And if there's a solo version of it, I want to play that more than another version, right?
Sure.
So,
well, and like I'm even thinking like we have a friend who has played Scythe. He has a copy of Scythe and he's brought it over for us to play, but he's played it a lot solo. And I'm like, yeah, I would not be up for trying to do all that setup and play it for an hour. I'm playing solo games like in the car when I'm waiting to pick up my kids from
school. Sure. Yeah, a really good one that came out recently was Palm Island. That one was a really cool solo, very compact.
I am all over that. I'm enjoying it
we have that.
Quite a bit.
Yes. Yeah, that's a good one. That's a really good one. I don't know if I'm... I'm not associated with that project at all, but like it was a good Kickstarter and a good product that came out.
Yeah, I agree. We haven't talked about it too much on the show yet because I'm trying to also play the 2-player version, and that's been
a little
bit of a struggle. But,
wow, I just got thrown under the bus. I don't know if you caught that.
Oh, I see what happened there. Now I'm picking it up. That's funny.
But no, things like that, or things that I can set out, you know, I have a little tray I made up that's like the size of a sheet of paper, you know, that I can set up in the car. But yeah, that sort of idea is definitely where I go with the solo games. So anytime I see a game, I'm like, oh, this is already short and relatively compact, and oh, I could play it by myself, even better.
Yeah, yeah, I'm that type of gamer. I'm actually very much a gateway gamer just by choice, right? I prefer to play, I really enjoy Lords of Waterdeep. I could play it anytime. I'll play Catan anytime. I play Ticket to Ride a lot.
I'm rejoicing about Lords of Waterdeep over here.
I'm fist pumping over here. Yes.
I'm by my own personal enjoyment standards, I will be more likely to play a game. I really like Grim Forest, right? Like, I like Rococo is probably on the heavier side of what I'm talking about, but even then, the gameplay is very simple. So I actually am a very, very much there for the company, I guess I would argue, is over necessarily what I'm doing on the board. I just like playing around with folks, so.
I hear you.
Yeah. I have thrown down on some pretty heavy games in the past, and I mean, I've had fun, but it's more like I've now experienced that. I probably don't need to play that game again.
Yep.
And that's that, right? Like I have a claim to fame at, I think it was BGG 2 years ago. I went to BGG Con. It would have been 2 years ago. It would have been 3 years ago now. 3 years ago, I went to BGG Con and played the Colonists. And I played all four eras of the Colonists. And so 8 hours later, we finished the game. And
yikes.
It was one of those. So I am glad I played the game. I enjoyed it while I was playing. And I had a dinner break in between and came back and we wrapped it up. But I never need to play that again.
I understand.
Yeah,
I can understand that as well. Yeah.
So, I feel the same way about even Twilight Imperium. That's a very, very popular game. I enjoyed when I played it. I think I didn't finish one of the plays, and then I also didn't finish the second time we tried to go at it. And then I just I don't need to play that. I've already experienced the way that flows and the way people will strategize against each other on that, and I enjoyed my time while I was playing it, but I won't be looking to play it, right?
I feel that way about Through the Ages and Terra Mystica. Like, I love both of those games. Yep. Like, they're a lot of fun to play digitally.
Yes. I was actually about to add that, is I love Through the Ages on my phone. It's amazing.
Exactly. Yep,
but to play it in person, that would be too much. Too much.
I've never done it, and I don't even think I could bring myself to play it.
Yeah. Well, before my time with Long Pack, I actually was with Eagle Griffin, and at the time, Eagle Griffin had the rights to Through the Ages, so we were actively selling it. So yeah, it's
sure.
I'm familiar with both versions. So
yeah, absolutely. Well, all right. Is there anything else you want to add about Tangled Timelines? We haven't talked about like price point and stuff.
Oh yeah, price. It's $13 plus shipping. The shipping is very, very reduced and subsidized and all that fun stuff. U.S. backers are going to go out the door at $15. So it's not going to break the bank. You're getting 104 cards. The demo version that you played only went A through M. I've added 52 extra cards that are promo sets. And the easiest way to get a full set of Tangled Timelines is to back the Kickstarter. Because what happens after the Kickstarter is I'm going to take the remaining decks that were not sold to backers, and then I'm going to distribute. Maybe I should explain this. Tangled Timelines exist as like four of each hero, right? So let's just say N right now is the Nether Seer, and the artwork is inspired by Lizzie Funkhauser of Board Game Spotlight.
Sure.
So the Nether Seer, after the Kickstarter, all of the Nether Seer four cards, right, in each set, those sets will all go to Board Game Spotlight for them to use in their promotions as like a gift for the community and all that stuff. So there's 13 different places all of the promo cards are going to end up at. So the only way to get a full game of Tangled Timelines, and I shouldn't say the only way, but it's definitely, you will be hunting it down if you don't go into the Kickstarter. You will be trying to find those forever, I would argue. They're going international because one of them is Martin Poole, who also runs a Facebook community, Board Game Exposure. Yeah, yeah. So he's our xenomorph in the Kickstarter. And all of these are really just like showing appreciation to community builders and to some other folks who have done stuff. It's always an awkward conversation because at one point the Smiths will end up in a game that I make. But these 13 were spoken for when Cutie Mip Patootie. So in the future, you guys might be included in a future game. But for these 13, they're gonna end up in like artwork inspirations is going to he's from Australia, so there's gonna be one in Australia. Two sets are gonna be in Europe because Katie Aidley is one of the characters. She runs the wargaming channel, Katie's Game Corner. So anyway, all of these characters are all going to be distributed to their respective namesakes, and then they are going to be able to maybe sell them or however they want to use them to benefit their own channels and projects. So it's kind of just a gift to the community that they will be able to continue their work.
That's really cool.
Yeah, that was
like that's a really cool thing that you're doing.
Yeah, I wanted to make the campaign special for the backers, right? But I also I hate stretch goals. I'm a person who even on the backer side, like on the backer side, knowing what I know about the manufacturing side of the business, I know that it's made up. I know that it's fake. It's not real. It's all smoke and mirrors. It really is. And I'll put it in perspective. A minimum print or run for a board game is arguably 1,500 units at the minimum, I would argue. If you're going below 1,500, I really don't think there's a – unless you're doing like a vanity project, there's no business sense in doing less than 1,500 units of a game, any type of game. Because the way the scales of economy work, you have to make at least that many. And then after that, numbers on the scales of economy don't really benefit you until you hit maybe 3,000 units. And then it starts to drop with the paper price going down. But the small amount that you're making in a Kickstarter, you can even look at like the most successful Kickstarters. And, you know, the really good ones are going to hit 1,000 and then 2,000 and then 3,000, right? But within the Kickstarter. The money that they're going to make actually is going towards distribution interest after the Kickstarter campaign. So if you do really well on Kickstarter, that's great, but that's not the end of the story, and you're going to actually make a majority of your units as a result of interest from distributors who then want to sell 10,000 more copies, right? As an example.
Right.
So these exclusives or this deluxe versions of the game, they're actually the pricing is decided before the Kickstarter starts. So they've already accounted for all of the stretch goals they will possibly hit, you know, within reason. Every stretch goal that they'll hit within the original pricing of the game. So until the last stretch goal is hit, the people who use stretch goals are actually just, all they're doing is it's a marketing way to keep people excited in the Kickstarter campaign. But in reality, you as a backer aren't getting the full game until all the stretch goals are unlocked, which the publisher planned ahead of time in order to sell the game, right? So anyway, I'm not a fan of stretch goals. I know that they work. I know that they're popular with a lot of people. They keep people invested, but I choose not to use them for the sake of transparency, I'll argue, and I think that the reason why someone should buy something is present at the beginning of the Kickstarter campaign. I like this concept. I want to support this creator. All those things happen like within 5 or 10 seconds of you actually engaging a Kickstarter campaign. And then everything afterwards is all just fluff and details. And I'm really excited to tell people about the process of making the game, but I don't need to like sweeten the pot any more than 104 cards for $13. Right?
Yeah.
Sure. Well, Anitra knows that I'm plenty abstinent, so I don't listen to people anyway.
Right. Like, and a lot of people are like that. A lot of people nowadays, especially if you're a super backer, you're generally the person who's going to back a campaign because you like the original concept, and then you will tune out the rest of the campaign. You're literally not going to go ever second guess your purchase. You're never going to go back. I also, like, on the flip side of that, I've never ever not liked a game and then they unlocked some stretch goal that changed my mind.
Sure.
Right. Yeah. So the sale has been made or it hasn't been made, but nothing you do to like try and market to those extra people better is going to change that. Like nothing, there's no conversion that happens from someone other than maybe a vocal minority for, there's no reason to put in the stretch goals is really what I'm getting at.
Right.
Is because the sale is made or it's not made, but you don't need to like cater to a vocal minority of people who want stretch goals. We're getting into a lot of like petty meta Kickstarter stuff. But anyway, if you see Tangle Timelines, you like the artwork, you think the game's fun, you should back it because it's only $13. And I've set it up.
All we need to do is get you over 3,000 and it'll mess up all your numbers. And that's my goal.
Yeah. It won't though, because even on it's already at like a minimum manufacturing cost that I could afford to make it. So it's not like nothing will change. Like if I make an extra 50 cents per unit, then that's great. I'm very grateful for that. But but it's not going to make or break my decision to change the game or add in superfluous content. But I really hope that you like it for what it is for $13 on Kickstarter when you see it.
Yeah, I agree. Like I said before the show, I'm not going to tell anybody to go back a game.
Yeah,
but I will be backing it on Tuesday. So
and I appreciate that. A lot of people have gotten excited about it. It's very reaffirming when I post something and then like people just throw out the hearts and enjoy what I'm putting out, and then I'll put out the video and people are sharing it and having a good time. And I think it bodes well for what I think might happen in the Kickstarter. It's a very low funding goal because I can afford that. Like I can just, I'll put in some of my own money if it were to barely fund. But if you could do the math, like when you see the Kickstarter campaign, the goal is $1,000 and I only need 66 people to fund. So if you like do that math, like yeah. I hope that I've enticed at least 66 people to fund. And then after that, it'll all just be, it's a guaranteed win. And hopefully that will help that bandwagon effect take over where people are like, oh yeah, it's definitely going to get made. So let's just bag it for the $13.
Sure.
Yeah. That's what I like to see.
All right. Yeah. It works for me. Well, Daniel, where can people, if they have questions about the inner workings of Kickstarter and the manufacturing of games or just general timelines, where can they find you online?
Yeah, I live on Facebook. I tried to venture out to other platforms and it's fine. I'll hit up Twitter every now and then and I'll post some stuff. But in reality, like if you're really trying to become part of the tabletop industry, I would honestly recommend that you just show up to a major convention. And I'm at most of them through my work with Longpack. I travel to about 13 to 15 conventions a year. And they're all the big ones. So I would actually recommend that you can reach out to me online if you really want to. You can message me. But I would actually, you know, shake my hand and meet me at the biggest convention near your hometown. And then we'll talk about business there.
Yeah. Daniel will take silly pictures with you. It's great.
And I'll take a picture with you if you ask for it.
So true.
So, all right. Well, dear, where can people find us online?
Well, you can find us on Facebook and on Twitter and on Instagram at FamilyGamersAA.
You can also go to our Facebook community by going to thefamilygamers.com/community. And lots of people are posting in there and talking about cool stuff.
Yeah.
It's become a fun place to be.
Play, you know, talk about playing games with your kids or your parents or your grandparents.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a good time.
It's a good time.
You can always email us, Andrew@thefamilygamers.com.
Anitra@thefamilygamers.com. Please don't forget to subscribe to the podcast if you have not already. Tell your friends about the podcast. You probably know someone who could use some more advice about playing games as a family.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't know anyone who could use some more of that content, you can help anyway by leaving a review at Apple Podcast or wherever you get your podcast.
Right. Or if you don't feel like leaving a review, you can always visit us on PodPledge. Go to thefamilygamers.com/PodPledge to find out about all the cool, nifty little backer rewards that we have available.
You can be part of the family.
You could be part of the family. That's right. All right, well, I think that is going to be it for us this week. We've got some football to watch over here.
Yeah, yeah.
So until next week, everybody, play games with your kids.